Sunday, 14th of July. Have you spoken to Erin? Alex asks Josie in the kitchen the following morning. Josie nods. Just messaged her. She's fine. And, dare I ask, Walter? Have you spoken to him at all? No. No, I have not, and I don't intend to. So, how are you going to move forward? Alex hears a small catch in her voice as she words her last question. Josie has been here for only a day or so, but Nathan hates her. The kids are weirded out about her face, and the cat is not happy about having a dog in the house who keeps growling at her. I really don't know, Alex. I feel like I have a lot to process. Maybe your mum could... No! Josie breaks in before Alex has got even halfway through the sentence. I am not involving my mum. No. I'm just going to work this out for myself. Yes, but Josie, you have to work this out with Walter, don't you see? You're going to need to see him. Alex sees a dark shadow pass across Josie's face, accompanied by a slight shake of her head. Not yet. I'm not ready to talk to him yet. Do you want me to talk to him? No, God, definitely not. I just need to... Alex, I need to be here, just for a while. Is that okay?
Alex feels her insides curdle.
Well, yes, of course, for a while, but I have my sister coming to stay next week. I'm afraid we'll need the guest room back then.
Oh, Josie blinks.
Right. When is she coming?
Saturday.
Oh. I see. Okay. Well, I'll be out of your hair by then, I promise.
Alex swallows down a bilious realization of what she has just allowed to happen. Josie thinks she is welcome to be here all week, and smiles.
Thank you, and I'm sorry. You have nothing to be sorry for, Alex. Honestly, you're amazing.
Alex waits a beat before she asks her next question.
Listen, Josie, I know people who can help you. Women who can help you. My friend, Marie Lejeune, who I told you about.
I interviewed her for my podcast. She's the co-founder of a domestic abuse charity, the biggest in the country. She'd be able to help. I can put you in touch with her if you want. If you're feeling unsafe. She draws in her breath as she waits for Josie's reaction, but Josie merely nods and says,
Okay, thank you. But I feel safe. I promise.
Oh, says Alex.
Good. What are you doing today, Alex?
Josie asks.
Oh, nothing much, really. Nathan's working today, so I was going to take the kids out for lunch. Never mind, then. No, go on. I was just thinking, since I'm here, maybe we could spend some time on the podcast. I really feel like I want to talk about the girls.
Alex nods, containing her response.
Sure, she says. Yes. Let me just tell the kids where I'll be and we can get going.
Mandy Redwood has been school administrator at Parkside Primary School from 1998 to the present day.
Alex Summer's kids were both at Parkside. Lovely kids. Some families just light up a school like ours, you know, and the Summers are one of those families. And so it was surprising when Alex came to me that day, back in 2019, asking after the fares. You couldn't imagine two more different families, two more different mothers. Obviously, at the time, I had no idea that Alex was making a podcast about the fares, so I told her what I remembered. But it was only after everything happened, later on, that I went through the records, and that's when I remembered other things too. Like the day that Roxy broke a child's finger in the reading corner when they were in reception. Trod on it. Just stood there, crushing it under the sole of her shoe. The kid screaming. Of course, we had to bring the parents in after that, and they were just emotionless. Completely emotionless. It was the strangest thing. I put it down to shock at the time, but now I know what was really going on in that house. Well, it all makes more sense.
This is a recording from Alex Summers' podcast, captured on the 14th of July, 2019.
What did Walter do when you told him about the child with the broken finger?
Well, I didn't tell him. He went off to work early back then, out of the house by 7 o'clock most mornings, not back until 5 or 6. The school day was a total mystery to him. I think he set foot on school premises about 5 times over the years the girls were there. So I just didn't say anything.
And Roxy didn't tell him?
No, Roxy didn't tell him. It was just, well, his temper, you know. We were all a bit scared of him.
Was he violent with the girls?
Not then, no. But he was rough. He'd push them about, especially Roxy, but not violent. That came later. I have not been a good parent. I have not been a good parent.
What do you mean?
I just mean, I let bad things happen. I didn't stop them. I just let it all happen.
Two p.m. Alex's phone buzzes for the third time in a row. She puts her finger in the air and presses pause on the recording, removes her headphones and says, "Sorry, Josie, I should get this. It's Eliza. Hi, baby. Mum, can you come back inside now? Leon's being really annoying and I'm hungry." Alex glances at the time. It's nearly 2 o'clock. "Yes, I'm really sorry. Yes, I'm coming in now." She throws Josie an apologetic look. "I'm so sorry, but I've really left them alone for long enough now." Josie nods. "Yes," she says, "of course. Sorry, I'm being selfish. It's just I've kept this stuff all locked up for so long now, and I'm scared that if I don't get it all out in one go, it might go back in again." Alex smiles. "We won't let that happen, Josie, okay? Let's take a break for today, and then we have all day tomorrow. I assume you won't be going into work tomorrow." Josie nods. "All day tomorrow then, okay?" "Yes," says Josie. "Okay."
Monday the 15th of July. Josie awakes to the sounds of Alex's family getting ready for school. For a moment the sound is reassuring, like an echo of a happy day at the beach or a childhood Christmas. For a moment, she is back in the early days of parenting, when her babies were adorable and her husband was handsome and strong. It occurs to her that maybe this was never actually the case, that she is looking back through an out-of-focus lens. But it had been better, at first. It had to have been better. Otherwise, what on earth was it all for? She gets out of bed and throws on the linen gown that Alex left for her. She picks up the dog and puts on her slip-on shoes and heads downstairs. "Morning," she says as she walks into the kitchen. She sees the children turn and gawp at her. The sight of them in their Parkside uniforms is unnerving, and she gawps back. The dog growls when he sees the cloud cat sitting on the kitchen counter. "Morning, Josie," says Alex, who is wearing a white embroidered tunic top over yoga pants and has pulled her hair from her face with a fabric headband. She is barefoot and cutting a banana into slices directly over a toasted bagel and looks like one of her Instagram posts come to life. "Come in. Can I get you anything to eat?" Josie shakes her head. No, thank you. I'll just have a coffee. Is it okay if I use your machine? Oh, don't worry about that. Nathan will make you one. Nathan?
Nathan appears from the terrace, clutching an empty cereal bowl and a mug.
Can you make Josie a cappuccino?
Josie sees a look of antipathy pass across his face, masked with a grim smile.
Sure, he says. Sugar?
Josie nods.
One, please. Thank you.
She takes a seat on one of the mismatched chairs at the table, opposite Leon, who eyes her suspiciously.
My children went to your school, she says, when they were small. But they're big now. Where are they now?
Oh, she says, Erin is staying at her friend's house and Roxy is off travelling the world.
So they're adults?
Yes, they're adults. Josie feels her voice crack dangerously on the last syllable and clears her throat.
I hear you still have Mandy in the office.
Leon nods seriously. Josie lets her eyes linger on his hands, still plumped up with whatever it is that lives under the skin of young children. There's a scab on the knuckle of his thumb, and she remembers scabs. She remembers verrucas and nits and ingrown toenails and baby teeth hanging on by threads and all the other tiny, perfect defects of small children. She resists the urge to touch the scab, to give it a magic kiss. She resists the urge to say, "Oh no, you have an owie." She feels the loss of her children so viscerally and horribly that she could scream with the agony of it. She manages a smile and says, "Mandy was there when my children were there." Leon runs his hands back and forth along the edge of the table and then looks up at Josie and says, "How come you're the same age as my mum but your children are already adults and we're only small?" "Well, that's maths, really, isn't it?" Leon looks at her questioningly. "So, if I'm 45 and my oldest daughter is 23, then how old was I when I had her?" Leon screws up his face and says, "Is that 45 take away 23?
"Yes, yes, that's exactly what it is. Clever boy."
"So that's..." He unpeels his fingers from his fist, one by one on the tabletop, like an unfurling blossom, as he counts it out.
22?
"Oh my goodness, and how old are you?"
"I'm 6.
"6? And you can do such complicated maths, that's amazing. Yes, 45 take away 23 is 22. And that's how old I was when I had my first child. And what is 45 take away 6?
"That's easy. It's 39.
"Yes. So your mum was 39 when she had you. And that's why my children are grown-ups and you are still only 6. Because everyone does things at different times." Josie turns and looks at Alex. Alex is smiling. "He's very good at maths, your boy."
"Yes," says Alex.
"He is. Leon's good at everything. Aren't you, baby? Apart from being ready to walk out the door when it's time to go to school.
So come on, let's get those shoes on, shall we?"
Soon the house is empty. Nathan has gone to work and Alex is walking the children to school and will be gone for at least half an hour. Josie is alone. She crosses the kitchen and looks at the artwork on the special board that has been installed for the children. She looks in particular for any signs of stress or darkness, remembering the unsettling drawings that Erin and Roxy used to produce, the concerned looks on teachers' faces at parent-teacher meetings as they passed across pieces of artwork that displayed what they described as signs of emotional stress.
But here there are only yellow suns and orange flowers and happy mummies and smiling daddies. Here is the art of healthy children living in a happy home.
She unpins a tiny scrap of a sketch. It's a girl, drawn in minute detail, with a giant bow in her hair and a small dog on a lead that looks a bit like Fred. Underneath is the word, teeny. Josie doesn't know who the girl is meant to be or whose dog it is meant to be.
But the image is so pure and perfect that she knows she needs it.
She slips it into the pocket of the linen dressing gown and rearranges the other drawings a little to hide the space. Then she notices a calendar. It is printed with family photographs. Her eyes go to next Saturday. There it is, Zoe and Petal. Zoe is Alex's sister's name. She feels a reassuring sense of calm. Alex had not been lying to her. Her sister really is coming to stay on Saturday. She smiles a small smile and traces the calendar entry with her fingertips. She opens the fridge then, lets her eyes roam over the contents, is surprised to see cheese strings and mini pepperamis, not surprised to see something in a tub called skyr and something else in a tub called baba ganoush. She feels she should be showered and dressed by the time Alex returns from dropping the children, so she heads upstairs. There are three rooms on this floor, one bedroom for Alex and Nathan, one bedroom for Leon. And at the back of the house, overlooking the garden, is a small study. Josie goes to the study door and peers inside. A desk in the window, a wall of bookshelves, and there against the back wall, what looks like a sofa bed. She hitches up the bottom cushion and sees the metal mechanism, then lets the cushion drop again. So, there is another spare room in the house. She does not have to leave on Saturday. She smiles and heads up the next flight of stairs to her room next to Eliza's on the top floor. She's not ready to leave. Not even slightly.
Ari, Juno and Dan are subscribers to gaming platform Glitch.
So, yeah, I think we're all just kind of messing about that night. We had a couple of friends over. We had a few beers. It was a hot July night. All the windows were open, so we weren't paying as much attention as we normally would. We weren't, you know, like, wrapped.
So you were normally wrapped?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, she was amazing. We just knew her as her player name, Erased.
Her player name? Erased.
Yeah, I can see now that was sort of a play on words, sort of a combination of her real name and a comment on her real life. But we didn't know anything about her real life. She was just erased to us. She played with a, like, green screen backdrop so we couldn't see her actual room. It looked like she was in an empty warehouse. She was really quiet. She virtually whispered. That's unusual in this world. But that was part of what made her cool. So it was the noise that alerted us that something weird was happening.
From your computer?
Yeah, we saw her getting off her chair, and she never did that. She never moved. And she disappeared, and it was all kind of a blur. Because of the green screen, you know? You know how it messes with the movement? Screaming, shouting, banging. And then it went dead. Literally just dead. Her chair sat there empty. We watched and we watched and we watched, and she did not come back. And we all started messaging each other, like, all over the world. But nobody knew where she lived. Nobody knew her real name. Nobody knew anything about her.
We had footage of the whole thing. I called the cops. They were like, "What do you want us to do about it? She's on the other side of the world." We sent the footage to Glitch. They didn't have a physical address for her, just an IP address and email details. They told us she was in, like, North London. So we started messaging anyone we knew in North London. We just became obsessed with this thing. It went viral in the community. It was all anyone was talking about. And then suddenly, just as we were getting close to finding out who she was and where she lived, the story broke. And then, holy crap, our minds blew. Our minds just totally and utterly blew.
Josie is ready and dressed and sitting at the kitchen table when Alex gets back from dropping the children at school. The dog is in the back garden, sniffing around the flower beds. Alex sees that Josie has attempted to cover up some of the damage to her face with makeup and wonders, for a moment, where she had found it. She had arrived here on Saturday night with only her tiny handbag and the dog. "You look better," she says, indicating Josie's face. "Yes. I was sick of seeing that horror show in the mirror. I found a tube of something in the bathroom cabinet. I hope you don't mind." Alex shakes her head distractedly. She's 99% sure there was no foundation or makeup in the bathroom cabinet in the ensuite to the spare room. But maybe a guest left it there without her noticing. "I just have a couple of jobs I need to do around the house and then we can get going. Is that okay?" "Absolutely," says Josie. "I'm happy just sitting here in your lovely kitchen." Alex throws her the warmest smile she can manage and then heads up to the bedrooms. She wrenches dirty bedclothes off Leon's bed and bundles them together. Then she redresses it with fresh sheets and empties his waste paper bin into a black bag. She does the same in her bedroom and in the bathroom. As she moves from job to job, she is followed by a sense of unease. She tries to unhitch it from her psyche, but she can't. Everything feels wrong. Everything feels off kilter. She hears the dog yapping in the back garden and peers out to see him staring longingly at a squirrel up a tree. She pictures Josie sitting at the kitchen table. The strange benignity of her, the placid smile. She doesn't seem like someone whose husband assaulted her on Saturday night and who had to escape in the early hours and hasn't been home since. She doesn't seem like she's in the eye of a terrible personal trauma. She seems happy. She brings the dirty laundry in the black bin bag downstairs, and there she is, just as she'd left her. "I'll be 2 more minutes, she calls out to Josie before taking the laundry into the utility room. "No rush." And there it is, that strange, unnerving note of jollity. A moment later, they are in the recording studio, each with a coffee in front of them and headphones on. The time is almost 10 a.m. and Alex presses record.
This is a recording of Josie Fair from Alex Summers' podcast, captured on the 14th of July 2019.
"I have to tell you about Brooke."
"Brooke?"
"Yes, she was Roxy's friend from school. Roxy never had a friend until Brooke, but she turned up at the beginning of year 10 and they were inseparable immediately. Brooke was bolshy, like Roxy, and potty-mouthed. And she was fearless too. Scared of nothing and nobody. But I liked her because she was a good influence on Roxy. She got Roxy studying that year. She persuaded Roxy that GCSEs were useful and she was fun. We weren't a fun family. Not in that way. But Brooke was fun and she made us fun too. Became almost a part of the family. She lived in a tiny flat with 2 small half-siblings. Didn't get on with her stepfather. Had lots of issues at home. So I think she saw our place as a kind of refuge. It was a lovely time in retrospect. And then we got towards the end of their year 11. The GCSEs were coming up. Brooke was over a lot, revising with Roxy. But suddenly one day, just before the exam started, it was all over. Roxy came home from school, said they'd had a big fight, said she'd punched Brooke, given her a fat lip. We got a call from the school asking us to come in, but then Roxy disappeared right in the middle of her exams, just gone for 3 whole days. Finally, she reappeared, looking grubby, shell-shocked. Said she'd been sleeping rough, been taken to a hostel, hadn't slept for 3 nights. I ran her a bath. She was in there for over an hour. Then she came out and told me what had happened. Told me about Brooke and Walter.
Walter?
He'd been grooming her all along. Just like he did with me. All those times she was here, when it felt like she was part of the family, it had been more than that. And then, just like he did with me, he bought her a necklace, he took her to the pub, he slipped a shot of vodka into her lemonade. And then, on her 16th birthday, he slept with her. While I was at work and Roxy was at school doing an exam, he invited her into our home and he slept with her in my bed. In my bed.
How did Roxy find out?
Erin told her. They thought Erin wouldn't notice because of the way Erin is with her gaming and everything. But she did. She heard them and then she saw through the crack in her bedroom door Brooke leaving, and she told Roxy when she got back from her exam. And the next day Roxy went into school and she beat Brooke. Beat her bloody. Shortly after Roxy came back from the homeless shelter, she left for good. We haven't seen her since.
...11 a.m. Josie stares into Alex's eyes. Alex looks mind-blown, horrified.
I know, says Josie. I'm sorry, it's gross. But there it is. There is the truth about the man I married.
Did you confront him?
No, she says. No, not then. I pretended I didn't know.
There it is again, across the smooth surface of Alex's face.
That flinch, that pinch.
Josie can hear Alex gulping dryly.
She comes in for the kill. That night, she says, on Friday, when we got home from having dinner here with you, that was the first time. The very first time I ever confronted Walter about what had happened with Brooke.
And that was why...
Alex gestures at the damage to Josie's face. Josie nods.
Yes. That was why. Exactly.
They stop for lunch. Alex toasts some sourdough for them and serves it with hummus and baba ganoush. She glances across the kitchen table at Josie and says, "Any word from Walter?"
"None. No."
Would he normally be in touch after an episode like this?
"I've never walked out on him before."
"So you normally just sit it out?"
"Mm-hmm. Yeah."
"So what was different this time?"
"Everything, I guess.
Ever since I turned 45, even before we started making this podcast, I've been feeling different about everything. I mean, that was why I was in that pub in the first place that night. We never normally go out to eat, at least not to places like that. And then I met you and..." Alex stares fixedly at Josie, not wanting to give away any of her interior disquiets through a twitch or a blink. "It felt like fate, like destiny. It was a turning point for me. My moment to take control of my narrative, unburden myself, share my truth. Change.
And so, on Friday night, the minute he first raised his hand to me, I already knew it felt different. I already knew I would go, and that I wouldn't come back. Alex swallows dryly. When did he first hit you? Oh, you know, I mean, it'd be hard to say exactly. It was a thing that happened slowly, you know, a little push here and there. Around the same time he started to be physical with the girls. I preferred it in a way. Preferred it if he pushed me around than them. Shocking, when you think about it. A man like that. Big man. Touching girls, women. Hurting them. I mean, it's impossible even to fathom. Like the sort of people who hurt animals. Her gaze drops to Fred, who sits at her feet, staring at her meaningfully. She tears off a corner of sourdough dipped in the baba ganoush and passes it to him. He chews it, excitedly. Has he ever hurt Fred? No, not yet. Probably only a matter of time, though, I guess. She passes another piece of bread and dip to the dog and then glances up at Alex. What about you? She asks. Has Nathan ever hurt you? Oh, God, no. And Alex realises, as she says it, how it sounds. It sounds smug and entitled, as if her life is lived on a different plane to Josie's, as if only a woman like Josie would have a husband who hit her. Only people who were brought up on estates and married to electricians experienced domestic violence when, of course, nothing was further from the truth. No, she says again, toning down her incredulity. Never. And the kids? No. Neither of us has ever hit the kids. Josie pushes her plate away from her and stares directly into Alex's eyes. But obviously, you have other problems. You have the drinking thing. Yes, says Alex, I do, although I am hoping after Friday night that might be the end of it. Well, we'll see, won't we? And there's an edge to her voice which makes Alex think that Josie actively wants Nathan to go on another bender, commit another cardinal sin, to blow it somehow. That she actively wants Nathan to be as bad as Walter. Tuesday, 16th of July. When is she leaving? Nathan whispers sharply into Alex's ear the next morning. They're standing side by side in their ensuite bathroom over their respective wash basins. Nathan is buttoning his work shirt. Alex is smoothing in her face cream. Fuck, I don't know. I've told her that Zoe's coming to stay on Saturday, so she knows that at least she has to be gone by then. Wait, hold on. Zoe's coming. Did I know about that? Alex sighs and rolls her eyes. Yes, Nathan, you did know about that. It's been in the diary for a month. We've talked about it. Zoe and Petal are sleeping over, and Maxine and the boys are coming over too, and we're having pizza and margaritas. So, a kind of girls' night then? No men? She sighs again. No, you don't have to stick around, but Nathan, please just come home at a proper time. I can't have my sisters judging you too. It's bad enough having her, she points at the ceiling, indicating Josie in the room above them, judging you. Please just have a normal night out and come home and come to bed and be here when my sister wakes up on Sunday morning. Nathan makes a face at her reflection in the mirror. It's his sweetest face. She can't help but soften to him. Good, she says, smiling slightly. Good. But all bets are off if that woman is still here come Saturday night. She won't be, Alex replies. I promise you, she'll be gone. Josie is clutching a pile of bedding when she walks into the kitchen at 8:30. Alex, she says, I am so sorry. Fred had an accident in the night. In fact, a few accidents. I think maybe it was that stuff we had yesterday. That brown stuff, the baba ganoush. Yes, I think it's not agreed with his stomach. Really sorry, but there's some mess on the floor too. But let me sort it all out. Just tell me where the cleaning stuff is and I'll do it all. As she speaks, Alex watches in horror as Fred dribbles diarrhea across the kitchen floor. Oh, she says, taking the bedding from Josie's hands. Oh, dear. Listen, you take him out in the garden. I'll clean this up. I'm so sorry, Alex. I really am. He's never done this before. No, no, of course. Please don't worry about it. Josie throws her an apologetic look and picks up the dog and heads into the garden, where he immediately squats and empties more liquid from within himself. Nathan, who is drinking his coffee on the terrace, looks from the dog to Josie and then turns to catch Alex's eye through the bifold doors, throwing her a horrified look. Alex shrugs and gathers cleaning stuff from under the sink. She thinks of Saturday. She thinks of saying goodbye to Josie, and then the arrival of her sisters, and the opening of tequila bottles, and squeezing of limes, and the calls and shouts of pizza preference to whoever is accessing the Deliveroo app, and the children buzzing from room to room, and she wants it so badly she can almost taste it. But for now, she has liquid, pomchy shit to clean up, and soiled bedsheets to wash, and, of course, a bed to redress. She retches slightly as she lifts Fred's mess with super-absorbent kitchen towels and antibacterial kitchen spray and throws them in the bin. Kids, she says through gritted teeth, chop chop, we're going to be late. She leaves the house 5 minutes later, her nostrils still thick with the smell of dog shit. Harry, her next-door neighbour's son, is just turning towards his house when Alex gets home half an hour later. Hi, she says. He turns at the sound of her voice and looks at her benignly. Hi, he says. How are you? Oh, yeah, good, thanks. How about you? Yes, I'm good too. She glances at her front door, then joins Harry at the turning to his garden path. Roxy Fair, she begins quietly. Do you remember a friend of hers called Brooke? Yeah, I remember her. She was a bit... She watches his face as he struggles to find the words he's looking for. A bit of a player, he says eventually. Alex throws him a disapproving look. An opinion based on... Yeah, sorry. I mean, nothing, really. She was just quite mature for her age, quite heavy-handed around boys. I have no idea if she was actually sleeping around, but that was the impression she gave. And what happened to her after you all left school? Do you have any idea? He blows air from his cheeks and says, she went missing, as far as I recall. Ran away, maybe. I can't quite remember, but I do know there was some kind of falling out between Roxy and Brooke towards the end. Oh, right. And what was that about? I don't know. But it was toxic for a while, really toxic. There was a fight, like a cat fight. One of them got a split lip. Can't remember which one. And Brooke, can you remember her surname? Yeah, I can. It was Ripley. And Brooke spelt B-R-O-O-K-E, I think. Amazing. Alex flashes him a smile. Great, thanks. Say hello to your mum and dad for me, won't you? Josie is gone when Alex gets back inside. The kitchen still smells faintly of disinfectant and shit, and she opens up the sliding doors to let fresh air in. Then she makes herself a coffee and opens her laptop and Googles... Brooke Ripley. There are many, most of them too old to be Roxy's Brooke. She opens Instagram and searches for her there. There are five. None of them looks quite right, but she clicks on each in turn. They live in places that someone who'd been brought up in Kilburn would not end up living, at least not at the age of 21. None of them looks quite right either. Then she goes onto Facebook and searches for her there. She clicks first on people, but runs once more into a seam of unlikely candidates, before clicking on posts. And there, her heart stops and then races. There is her name. Brooke Ripley highlighted in a sequence of posts about a missing girl. Alex clicks on the first post. She reads the first few words. Please help. Anyone in Kilburn, Paddington, Queen's Park, Cricklewood areas. My beautiful niece, Brooke. And then she starts. Josie is standing in front of her, clutching Fred. Oh, says Alex. You made me jump. I've cleaned the floor upstairs, she says, and opened the window to let some air in. If you want to give me some fresh bedding, I'll pop it on. Great. I'll get some out for you next time I go up. Again, I am so sorry. He seems fine now. I think he just needed to pass it through his system. I've never fed him anything like that before. He clearly wasn't built for it. Bless him, says Alex. Poor little thing. Are you up for some more recording this morning? Josie nods. Absolutely. Yes. Let me just get myself a coffee. Great. I'll just pop to the bathroom. See you soon. Alex shuts her laptop and heads upstairs to grab some fresh bedclothes for Josie from the cupboard on the landing. She leaves them at the foot of the stairs, intending to let Josie do it herself, but something makes her carry them up the stairs to the top floor. The door to the spare room is ajar. A breeze ruffles the curtains through the open window. The clothes that Josie was wearing when she arrived in the early hours of Saturday morning are hanging, laundered and fresh, from the freestanding rail. The pyjamas that Alex lent Josie are folded neatly on the stripped bed. In the ensuite, a damp towel hangs from the rail. And on the glass shelf above the sink is a tube of Alex's foundation that she has no recollection of having ever put there, and also a tube of her mascara. She picks them up and looks at them curiously, as if they might offer her an explanation. Then she sets about remaking the bed in the fresh clothes. She stuffs the pillows into their cases, shakes the duvet into its cover, and tucks the sheet under the mattress, and it is as she is doing so that she feels something hard and cold. She locates it and pulls it out. It's a key. It's attached to a fob with the number 6 written on the internal paper label. The fob is streaked with dried-on blood. Alex drops it, as if it is white hot, then slides it quickly, urgently, back under the mattress and closes the bedroom door behind her. Josie is waiting for her in the kitchen. She smiles. Ready? She says. Alex nods.
Fionn Roberts is Brooke Ripley's aunt.
This is the original Facebook post. Please help. Anyone in Kilburn / Paddington / Queen's Park / Cricklewood areas. My beautiful niece, Brooke, went to her school prom on Wednesday. She told friends that she was going to meet a friend afterwards, and her school friends said goodbye to her at the bus stop outside the prom venue on Shoot Up Hill in Cricklewood at just after 9 p.m. We have CCTV footage of her getting on the number 28 bus at 9:11 and getting off again near the top of Maida Vale at 9:22. After that, we don't know where she went, but she is not answering her phone and her mum and her family are worried sick. If you have any idea who she might have gone to meet on Wednesday at 9:30, please, please let us know. And please share this as far as it will go. The police have been informed, but there's only so much they can do. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Could I just have a minute?